It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes. Defense wins championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning. We are back with another episode of Mitten Madness, an entire hour of me rambling about sports here in the state of Michigan. And this week, there is plenty to dive into. Obviously, we're going to continue talking about the Red Hot Tigers, who continue to find themselves at the top of the MLB, the top of the AL Central, the top of the American League, and most importantly, the first team to 50 wins as they continue to look to have success this season. We're also going to get in on the NBA draft, talk about how the Big Ten fared, who drafted and who didn't, who else got signed, what some of these teams will look like, and obviously we'll touch on the Pistons and the choices that they made coming up in during the draft over the last couple of days. And we'll, of course, get in on Michigan State football, talk about those commits and what the season could look like as some of those guys could be impact players before getting into our picks to end out the show. As always, I'm vibing. I'm feeling good. My favorite lacrosse team is back playing lacrosse this weekend out in San Diego, California. I won't be there. I will be in Chicago, well, right outside Chicago, coaching this weekend, taking in some lacrosse and enjoying life. So I'm feeling good. My sports teams are doing well. And how can you complain when Checks notes the Tigers are the best team in the MLB? Let's talk about the Detroit Tigers. I'm going to get an update from the past week first before we touch on anything. As we know, they ended last week with a 2-1 series win over the Pirates. Even after one of those games was postponed, they had to run a doubleheader. They took care of business. They also ended up dropping a series to the Rays, 14-8, 8-3, and then they won the final game of that series, 9-3. And then they took care of business earlier this week with the Oakland Athletics, 11-4 victory in game one, a 3-0 loss in game two, but then an 8-0 victory in game three. So then that begs the question of what's coming up for the next couple of days before they get into the All-Star break. Minnesota is coming up. First game was yesterday, got a game today, and then another game tomorrow. Today's game, 1:10 p.m. on MLB Network. First pitch, it's Mize versus Ober. And then tomorrow, Sunday night baseball, your Detroit Tigers taking on the Minnesota Twins in the final game of that series, 7 p.m. first pitch on ESPN. Yes, flagship network ESPN. Scooble on the mound against Paddock. And then the Tigers will have a day off before traveling to Washington. They're going to have a 3-game series on the road at Nationals Park. The first, second, and third, they will take on the Nationals. 6:45 p.m. is the first pitch for each of those games. Flaherty will be on the mound in game one. We do not know who will be on the mound in games two and three for the Tigers. But for the Nationals, game one will be Williams. Game two will be Gore. And game three will be Irvin. Following that up, 4th of July weekend, which we'll touch on again next week when we do another episode of Mitten Madness. Cleveland will be the next series, the Guardians hosting the Tigers. The 4th, 7:10 p.m. is that first pitch, Mize against Ciccone. And then the 5th, 7:15 p.m. first pitch on Fox, Scooble will take on Allen. And then on Sunday, the 6th, 1:40 p.m. first pitch, Flaherty versus Williams. Those are three very winnable series. Obviously, the Twins is a huge series, with that being a divisional series. You want to continue to make stretch in that divisional space and continue to push yourself outward, making it harder for those teams to catch up. Get yourself a pennant and continue to ride your wave at the top of the AL. Washington hasn't quite been the Washington National teams that we are used to seeing over the last couple of years. They've really had struggles, not only with the bats, but also with the pitching and fielding. So they're a team that the Tigers should be able to handle pretty easily. And we're talking at, you know, two series wins. Maybe you drop a game in each, or maybe you only drop one. 5-1 in a six-game span is fantastic. You know, 4-2 in that span, also fantastic, especially if you're rolling into a tough divisional matchup with the Guardians, who, checking notes, earlier this year beat you 3-1 in a series at home. So this is a great opportunity for you to get a couple of those games back in this three-game series before having to move on to play the Rays and Mariners before the All-Star break. I really think the Tigers are in fantastic position to continue to be one of the best teams in baseball. But, I mean, while we're here, let's get on over to those standings and talk about who's doing what where. Right, starting in the AL, we'll start obviously with the Central Division. Our Tigers, the first team to 50 wins this year, 51-31. They're sitting 9.5 games above the Cleveland Guardians, who are 40-39. 11.5 games above those Twins at 39-42. 12.5 games above the Royals, 38-43. And the White Sox sitting tragically behind, 24.5 games, 26-55 on the year for the Chicago team. The American League East, led by the New York Yankees, 46-34. Right behind them, a half game back at 46-35 of the Tampa Bay Rays. And those Toronto Blue Jays, three games back from the Yankees, 43-37. In the AL West, the Houston Astros, 48-33 to lead the division. The Mariners, 6.5 games back at 41-39. And the Los Angeles Angels, with a perfect 500 record of 40-40, are 7.5 games back. Bumping things over to the NL, starting down in the West, team tied for first with the Detroit Tigers in the entire MLB, the Los Angeles Dodgers at 51-31. Six games behind them are the San Diego Padres at 44-36. San Francisco Giants are 44-37, which puts them 6.5 games back from the Dodgers. In the NL East, the Mets 48-34 at the top of that division. Just a half game back at 47-34 are those Phillies. And then the Braves, 10 games back from the Mets at 37-43. And wrapping things up in the NL, Chicago Cubs, the top of the NL Central at 48-33. Three games behind them are the Milwaukee Brewers at 45-36. And those St. Louis Cardinals coming in 4.5 games back from the Cubs at 44-38. So when we look at the league's overall top five in the National League, the Dodgers, of course, at the top, 51-31. Cubs right behind, 48-33, 2.5 games back. Three games back from the Dodgers are the Mets, 48-34. Three and a half games back from those Dodgers are the Philadelphia Phillies, 47-34. Rounding out the top five, the Milwaukee Brewers at 45-36, sitting 5.5 games back from the Dodgers. Over in the AL, in fifth, seven games back from the leader, Toronto Blue Jays at 43-37. In fourth, 46-35, 4.5 games back are the Tampa Bay Rays. Four games back in third are the New York Yankees at 46-34. Houston Astros, 2.5 games back from the leader at 48-33. And sitting atop of the American League, none other than that team that plays in Comerica Park. They wear orange, they wear blue, they wear white, they wear gray. They're known as the Detroit Tigers. They are sitting atop of the American League, bouncing over to the league overall. They're sitting atop of the league overall, tied with the Dodgers at 51-31. They have a plus 94 run differential, while the Dodgers are plus 89. The Cubs, 2.5 games back from them at 48-33, also are the Houston Astros. The Cubs have a plus 100 score differential, while the Astros are plus 50. And rounding out the top five, New York Mets sitting three games back from the leaders. They're plus 65 on the score differential on the year. You know what else we got to do? Touch in on our stat leaders again after this week. Riley Green on the Triple Crown route for the Detroit Tigers, leading the team in batting average, home runs, and runs batted in. He's got 61 RBIs on 17 home runs. He's batting .295 on the year. He has an OBP of .349 and a slugging percentage of .529. I mean, the man is putting the barrel on the bat. I'm not sure if the Tigers are using torpedo bats. And if they're not, Riley Green is a reason why you don't need to. The man is putting the barrel on the bat and driving it out of the park, putting the barrel on the bat, putting it into play, putting the barrel on the bat and getting runs in, you know, batting runs in. You can't beat that. That's what you're looking for 100 times out of 100. But, I mean, a torpedo bat would probably make him just a tad bit better. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? There, looking over at the pitching, you already know what it is. We got another Triple Crown guy, a guy fighting hard for the AL Cy Young, who has an absolute chance to not only win the Cy Young, but to win AL MVP with the way he is playing. It's Tarik Skubal. 2.29 ERA, 9 wins on the year, and 125 strikeouts, leading the team in all three categories as he continues to make strides this year, building off the immaculate rookie season that he had last year. Tarik Skubal is going to be a Tiger for a long time, and if he keeps playing like this, there's only a matter of time before the Tigers find themselves fighting for that glory spot that they've been searching to fight for years and years now. Once again, Tigers got some huge matchups coming up this weekend. First against the Twins. Got to take care of business with a divisional rival, but I'm not too concerned with that before they play the Nationals, and then they get into the Guardians again next week. When we come back from the break, we're going to be touching in on the NBA draft. How did the Big Ten do? Who went where? And also, we're going to talk about the Pistons and if they played this draft right. We'll be back after the break with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Welcome back to Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It is time for us to talk about the NBA draft, which went down over the last couple of days. Lots of highly anticipated names, lots of people wondering where people were going to go, and lots of people trying to see how good the Big Ten actually was this year. And I think a lot of those questions got answered within not only the first day, but the second day came and backed that up as well. So let's just look at, you know, the lottery picks overall. First, no surprise here. Cooper Flagg from Duke goes number one to the Mavericks. Dylan Harper out of Rutgers goes to the Spurs as the number two pick. There's a lot of questions on who was going to be there. Some people thought it would be his teammate Ace Bailey, but that wasn't the case either. Number three, to the 76ers, out of Baylor, VJ Edgecombe. Coming out of Duke at number four, Con Canupel. Number five, Ace Bailey, that teammate of Dylan Harper at Rutgers. Trey Johnson out of Texas going to the Wizards. Ace Bailey went to the Jazz. Con Canupel went to the Hornets. Pelicans will take guard Jeremiah Fears at seven. Igor Demin out of BYU going to the Nets. Colin Murray-Boyles out of South Carolina, I believe. Yes, yeah, South Carolina went to the Raptors. Kamen Malouk out of Duke went to the Rockets, then got traded to Phoenix. Cedric Coward of Washington State went to the Trailblazers at 11, was traded to Memphis. Noah Nsunga out of France goes 12 to the Bulls. Derek Queen out of Maryland goes 13 to the Hawks and then traded to the Pelicans. And number 14, going to the Spurs, Carter Bryant out of Arizona, then traded to the Hawks. And then, you know, so this almost went chalk. There were very few people drafted that we weren't expecting to see here. Igor Demin went a little higher than some people thought. Some people maybe thought Carter Bryant was a little higher than he should have been. Derek Queen went pretty high. Some felt like he could have been a lower first round guy, but the first five picks were almost chalk. Like, we kind of knew this was how it was going to go. We knew that Jeremiah Fears and Trey Johnson would be in that next best bunch. This is very much working out in many of the ways that we expected it to in this draft. But now let's talk about just the Big Ten overall. Dylan Harper out of Rutgers goes 2. Ace Bailey out of Rutgers goes 5. And then as we continue to look down this list, at 20 and 21 is Kasper Jakančionis out of Illinois and Will Riley out of Illinois. Jakančionis goes to the Heat, and then at round 20, which they got in a trade from the Golden State Warriors, the Jazz traded Will Riley to Washington. So he'll be a Wizard at the 21st pick. And then out of Michigan, it's the man, Danny Wolfe. Yeah, you heard that right. Number one, big 7-footer that can handle the ball, shoot from the outside. Great pick and roll ball handler. He can also be the picker, has a great inside game, plays defense, rebounds the ball. Yeah, that guy, Danny Wolfe, the leader of the Michigan Wolverines last year, was drafted in the first round, 27th overall, to the New Jersey the Brooklyn Nets, who acquired that pick in a trade from the Houston Rockets. So Danny Wolfe going to be on the East Coast again after spending some time in Yale. Going to look to be a bright spot in the front court for that Nets team, but only time will tell. And then wrapping up the first round, out of Penn State, Janich Konin-Niedenhauser, 6'11", 243-pound center, is going to the Clippers in a pick that was traded to them. And you guessed it, the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander trade, which we'll touch on a little bit later when we talk about the rest of the finals and how that played out. But that's 6 guys, I believe. Totally missed one. Coming in at number 25, going to the Orlando Magic in a pick that they got in a trade from the Denver Nuggets is Jace Richardson out of Michigan State. So that gives 7 guys, I believe, in the first round. Rutgers and has 2 in Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. And then we go down. You add Derek Queen from Maryland to give us 3. You add the 2 Illinois boys, Jakančionis and Riley, which gives us 5. Jace Richardson gives us 6. Danny Wolfe gives us 7. And then Konin Niedenhauser gives us 8. 8 players from the Big Ten were selected in the first round this year. I don't know the last time that that's been done. But if you don't think that Big Ten basketball was great this past season, I don't know what to tell you, because this is proof in the pudding right here. So many guys out of one of the best conferences in the country were drafted. Going to check and see if anybody in the second round is coming out of the Big Ten. Here we are with the 14th pick, the 44th overall, the Thunder, which they got in a trade from the Atlanta Hawks, pick up Brooks Barnheiser out of Northwestern. And that may be, John Tanjay out of Wisconsin goes 23rd in the second round, which is the 53rd pick overall, to the Jazz, which they got in a trade from not only the Clippers, but also the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers took the pick from the Clippers, then traded that pick to the Jazz, and they decide to take Tanjay. And those are the 10 guys from the Big Ten selected in the NBA draft this year. That's an unreal amount for the Big Ten, and it continues to prove that the Big Ten is one of the best, if not the best, basketball conferences in the country, and they will continue to put out high-level talent that will compete at the next level and be of great fruition and impact to their teams. Now let's transition over to the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons only had 1 pick in this draft because they traded their first-round pick which was pick 17 that they had got from the New York Knicks in a trade to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And the Timberwolves chose Joan Berringer out of France, a center. So the Pistons only had 1 pick to work with in this draft. It was a second round pick. It was the seventh pick of the second round, which was the 37th pick overall. They choose Chaz Lanier, a guard out of Tennessee. And they got this pick from Toronto, who they got from Dallas. So Dallas traded the pick to Toronto. Toronto then traded the pick to the Pistons. The 6'4", 206-pound guard only has a few weaknesses, and he has questions to answer with his feel for the game, passing and defensive prowess, struggling to impact the game on nights his outside shots weren't falling. But, I mean, the dude is a dangerous shooter. He can shoot on the run. He can shoot fading away. He can shoot off the dribble. He can come off a screen and pop one, catch and shoot. He is a dominant guy from outside the three-point arc. He can hit the mid-range. And if you think that's all he's got, you better watch your head. Because if you jump with this man, he's going to put you on a poster. Chaz Lanier is a slashing three-point goddess. That's what we need on this team. At some point, I just would like him to be a tad bit taller. Can we get a 3-and-D guy on the wing rather than at the guard position? This team already has guards. Malik Beasley is coming back. You basically just drafted another Malik Beasley. What's the point in doing so? Doesn't make sense in my book. I feel like they should have went with a forward or a center to add some more boost into that front court, give our wings some help. But what do I know about coaching? What do I know about drafting? Only a little bit. They know a lot more than me. I did get a chance to watch some Lanier highlights. I do remember seeing some Tennessee games this year. The guy can ball. Don't get me wrong. The guy can ball. And he's got a 6'9" wingspan. So he's going to be able to play defense. He's going to be able to be in passing lanes. He's going to be able to get his shot off because he has a high release. It's just a matter of how well does he acclimate to the NBA. He's 19th in his position rank. So they think he's the 19th best guard in the draft, which isn't terrible. Technically, if it was a draft of all guards, he would be in the first round. And they think he's 38th overall, which puts him just 8 spots outside of the first round in all positions. So I don't think this is a terrible pick, but when you only have one pick, you really have to make it count. You really have to go for something that is going to 100% benefit your team and help your team. Especially when you have the track record that the Detroit Pistons have when it comes to draft picks, you want to see them making the right decisions. And some Pistons fans, including myself, are questioning this decision. Not to the tune of Darko Milicic back in 2003. That was insanity. But you do have to ask, what's the point in going to get this guy when you have Malik Beasley, when you have Cade Cunningham, when you have Marcus Sasser, when you know that Jaden Ivey is returning? It doesn't make sense. Go get a forward to help Assar Thompson and Ron Holland down there. Go get a center to help Jalen Duren and maybe move on from Isaiah Stewart or keep him there, whatever the case may be. We don't have a consistent Simone Fontecchio playing. I mean, yeah, Tobias Harris could use some help on the wing as well. He's a good player, but help, help, help. Get help where you need it most, not in a place that you think you just have a good player. With that being said, that's all I have about the draft pieces. Do want to send a congratulations to the Thunder as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander won Finals MVP, led the Thunder to a championship, their first, and many people had stuff to say about their parade. But when you work in a city or when you live in a city like Oklahoma City, you can't take time off to go to a parade. You got to work. You got to make your money. It is what it is. Once again, congratulations to the Thunder. Pistons, I hope you made the right choice, but we'll only find out in the coming months. We're going to get ready to talk all about Michigan State football, those recruiting classes, and what the fall could look like coming back from the break right here with Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back to Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to talk about some football as the summer's fall continues to roll closer and summer comes to an end. Those camps are getting started. Players are getting on campus. and recruiting is coming to a close. Everyone anticipating another exciting college football year, but every fan wants to know, what is it going to look like for their team? Are they going to have a chance at being successful? And we're going to dive into that for the Michigan teams here in just a moment. We're going to talk first about Michigan State. When you look at their recruiting class, it looks pretty solid. They have 21 total commits. Two of those are coming from ESPN 300. The other 19 are coming outside of that 300. They have 17 3-stars. They have 2 4-stars, no 5-stars. Their first 4-star is Cade Kaufman, the number 8 quarterback out of Kentwood, Michigan. He goes to East Kentwood, 6'2", 195 pounds, and he committed back on February 8th. Tyron Wortham out of Sarasota, Florida, Booker High School, is a 4-star as well, 6'180 wide receiver. Fiamatu Siale out of Seattle, O'Day High School, 3-star, 6'4", 260-pound defensive end. Colin Campbell out of Gilbert, Arizona, went to Williams Field, 6'6", 265, 3-star, number 54, offensive tackle. But just Cade Kaufman and Tyron Wortham are those 2 4-stars that are within the ESPN top 300. Going to see if they have anybody considering their school. Emmanuel Inaccio, he's in the 300. He's a 5-star offensive tackle, 6'7", 350. Tyler Atkinson, Caden Porthrow, Jariah Edwards, Xavier Griffin. Atkinson and Griffin are both outside linebackers. Edwards is a safety, and Porthrow is a tight end. These guys are all 5 or 4-stars. Taking a look at Michigan State, the list goes on, and they're from all over the country: Maryland, Georgia, Texas, Florida, Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, Indiana, California, North Carolina. Take your choice, and guys are taking a serious look at Michigan State, and there's about 20 to 25 guys on here who are in the ESPN 300, so this list of 21 commits could seriously climb pretty quickly, and you could see that number of 4-stars, that number of 5-stars, 3-stars climb. Those ESPN 300 commits could climb. This makes it to where these guys in Michigan State, with a few of these guys in the lineup, having Aiden Childs and Jonathan Smith leading the helm as head coach, could really make a few things happen. But it's all going to come down to the next couple of weeks, and if they're able to get any of these guys on campus and get them to commit to their team and become Spartans before the school year starts. Some offers going out, but a lot of guys have already chosen some other schools. Many of the guys that I already mentioned are still on this list. Many of these offers are top 300 guys. A couple of visits have occurred. The most recent visits, Gregory Patrick from Portage, Michigan, who ended up choosing Notre Dame instead of Michigan State. And then Tyron Wortham, who did choose Michigan State. Salse Moa and Calvin Obot have also taken visits, but have not committed to a school just yet. Michigan State has a lot of work to do, both in the recruiting realms, on the field, coaching staff, etc. But they are not far off. And, you know, in a couple weeks, we'll talk about their schedule and how that thing's going to look up and if they have a chance to make a bowl game this year. But the recruiting, I think, has gone well. Getting 21 recruits on campus, ESPN 300 or not, is huge, and it's going to help with your locker room and help get more guys believing in your system and wanting to come play there. So they're off to a great start. Jonathan Smith has done his job so far in making sure this team is good and ready to go. Now let's flip over to that team in Ann Arbor. They're not doing as well, per se, in the recruiting ranks. 14 total commits. 6 of them are in the ESPN 300. The other 8 are not. 8 of those commits are 4-stars. 5 of those commits are 3-stars. When we look at those commits, Brady Smiegel, number 4 quarterback out of Newberry Park, California, 6'5", 210. Zion Robinson, number 19 receiver out of Mansfield, Texas, 6'3", 180. Titan Davis, number 20 defensive end out of St. Louis, Missouri, 6'5", 240. Bear McWhorter, number 4 offensive guard out of Cuttersville, Georgia, 6'4", 305. Matt Ludwig, number 11 tight end out of Billings, Montana, 6'4", 230. Mikhail Blade, out of Chicago, Illinois, 6'5", 230, number 30 defensive end. Those are the top three, or the ESPN 300 commits that they have. But Tariq Boney out of Washington, D.C., 6'2", 235 is a four-star. Alistair Vallejo, number 29 defensive tackle out of Liberty Hill, Texas, 6'3", 305. He's a four-star. Jonathan Brown, Mason Bonner, Brody Jennings, Marky Walbridge, and Jalen Pyle are all three stars. And then a not-ranked kicker, Micah Dresser, out of Hinsdale, Illinois, 6'2", 185, is also committed to play at Michigan. As you can imagine, there are tons of guys wanting to get a shot at playing at Michigan. Lamar Brown, the number one defensive tackle. Emmanuel Iheanacho, the number two offensive tackle. Both five stars. Taking a look at Michigan. Tyler Atkinson, which we heard over with Michigan State. Jariah Edwards, who we also heard over with Michigan State, taking looks at Michigan. Xavier Griffin, taking a look at Michigan. Braylon Womack, Ethan Feaster, Savion Hyder, Jake Kruel. These are all guys who could come in and have immediate impacts on the offensive, defensive end as four- and five-star guys looking to get a slot on this Michigan team. Some visits that have gone down. Most of these guys have not committed. Zion Robinson, Titan Davis, Matt Ludwig, and Mikhail Blade all committed after taking looks at Michigan. They lost Kari Adams and Gregory Patrick to Notre Dame. They lost Zayden Krempen to Texas A&M. Gordon Sellers chose Clemson. But everyone else on this list is still open. A lot of them have already taken visits to Michigan. Some of them may take another visit. But Michigan is probably throwing the house at these guys, saying, hey, we won a national championship. We have strong alumni that are going to help with your NIL. We have Jordan Brand here. We have other NIL deals. We have tons of guys off in the NFL being key players for their franchises and more. How is it possible to say no to an offer like that unless you're getting the same thing from a Oregon, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Florida State, etc.? Michigan is in that cream de la creme situation where they can throw the book at just about anyone, and they're going to take a serious look at it because it is the University of Michigan, and when it comes to football, they are a blue blood, and they will get you to where you want to be, whether that's competing for a national championship and or making it to the NFL and getting drafted. These are all things that are very possible at the University of Michigan. And you see them trying to shape up with another class. But what I do like is their commitment to finding things that work for them. They're not going for the lower end guys. They want 3, 4, and 5 stars. They want guys who are going to come in ready to work, knowing exactly what they have and how to get there. And then inserting them into this lineup to see where they can be successful. Michigan gearing up for another great year. Even though they're dealing with everything with the NCAA and the suspensions, the recruiting trail is going well. People like what they see at Michigan, and the players want to play there. So we'll find out how their season will go along with Michigan State in just a matter of months. But for now, we got to keep going with this season of picks, touch on last week, and get into this week as well. We'll be back with that after the break right here with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back to Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. It is time for us to get into the picks for this week. And last week, well, not, you know, bragging on myself or, you know, patting myself in the back or anything, but, you know, another good week for you, boy. Hopefully you did just as well as I did, or maybe even better. I came in at 4-2 this past week. We got a dub from the Thunder, the Aces, the Fever, and the Tigers, but we got L's from Hill and Liberty. 4-2 after the week that I had. I'm feeling good because I'm sitting at 25-11, comfortably 14 games over 500. So it would take a total travesty for me to end up in a position I don't want to be in with this pick season. But you know what that means. We got to get into another week of picks, and I am loaded up with six marquee matchups that could make or break everything. I could walk into this week, go 0-6, and be staring at a horrible weekend, which happened not too long ago, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think I went 0-6, but I think I went like 1-5 or something like that. Yeah, I don't ever want that to happen again. So we're going to do our best to avoid that and look at what we got going this week. First game of the week, we'll start in the WNBA, which has been nothing but fireworks recently. Paige Bueckers has stepped on the scene and has been, I don't know, one of the best players we've ever seen ever. Just give her the rookie of the year now. I mean, and we put Caitlin Clark in the MVP vote last year. She's playing better than Caitlin Clark. Are we putting Paige Bueckers in the MVP conversation? Personally, if we did it last year, I say we do it this year. I could see how it couldn't happen. But Paige Bueckers is playing unreal ball. Don't even get me started on my girl Angel Reese. Angel Reese has been playing lights out, and not just on the rebounds. She ain't just grabbing rebounds. She's scoring again. She had her first triple-double not too long ago. She's averaging over 6 assists a game now. What do you mean? She's one of the best players in the league and is continuing to prove it. And she's got Carmilla Cardosa right next to her, who's also now rising to her occasion and playing well. That team in Chicago is something to be concerned with. But another team that is scratching heads right now, and not for a good reason, are the New York Liberty. They started on an absolute tear, 9-0 to start the year, and since then, they're 2-3. They're 11-3 now on the year, 5-2 on the road. They're traveling to take on the Atlanta Dream on Sunday at 3 p.m. Tomorrow, this game will be played on ABC, going down at the Gateway Center. ESPN is giving the Liberty a 56.5% chance to win this game, while only giving the Dream 43.5% when the Dream are 10-5 on the year and 6-1 at home. The New York Liberty are also without Jonquil Jones, who is still hurt. Granted, they have Breonna Stewart and Natasha Cloud, but when you look at Ryan Howard, Alicia Gray, Miss Jones for the Dream, who is going to help Breonna Stewart and Natasha Cloud? Because they're going to need help. They're not going to be able to do it by themselves against a team like the Dream, especially when they're playing at Gateway Center, where they are fantastic at home. They're 6-1. Oh, and this is game two of this series. Liberty already beat the Dream by 5 in New York. You don't think the Dream are hanging on to that? You don't think they remember that game? You don't think they're looking to bounce back and get back at the Liberty? In their last 5, the Liberty are 2-3. In their last 5, the Dream are 3-2. I'm going to go with trends. I'm going to go with vibes. I'm going to go with the fact that these are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. New York sitting the top at 11-3. Atlanta 10-5, a game and a half back. This closes that gap to just a half game and puts the Dream in a position to be, I don't know, the best team in the East? You mean to tell me they're not ready for that? I'm taking the Dream 100% of the time here. Mainly because the Liberty have been struggling. They're without one of their best players, and they're on the road against a team who is dominant at home. I'm not picking against the Dream, and hopefully you don't either. We're going to get on over to our second game in the WNBA before we hop off the hardwood. It's the WNBA Commissioner's Cup going down Tuesday, July 1st, 8 p.m. on Prime Video. Somehow the Indiana Fever have found themselves in the Commissioner's Cup against the defending champions, the Minnesota Lynx, who took care of business last year and won the cup. Obviously, as we know, Caitlin Clark has been doing her thing, but she is a game-time decision moving forward for the next couple of weeks, so we do not know if she's going to play in this game. And she's gotten her help from Aaliyah Boston as well. Nafisa Collier has continued to lead this Minnesota team to success and looks to continue to be successful. 24.5 points per game, 8.5 rebounds, and then she's got Courtney Williams giving her 6 assists per game as help. Nafisa Collier is a game-time decision as well, so that's something to keep an eye on. But if we're being honest, I think both these players go. I think it's the Commissioner's Cup, and they can't afford to not win this game. It means so much to everyone who's in it. 8 p.m. Once again on Prime Video. This is going down at the Target Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So the Lynx will have that home court advantage. They're 72-6 on the year. Or they're giving them a 72.6% chance to win this game. Just a 27.4% chance for the Fever. This is not game one of this series, but this is the first time they will play each other. They won't see each other until August, but I personally will take the Lynx in this game, whether Nafisa Collier plays or not. It's something about the Commissioner's Cup that draws Minnesota Lynx in, and they come in, the fans show out, and they normally win, leave with that trophy. I don't see anything changing this year. We're going to pop on over to the Diamond. We got two series coming up this week, and both of them have implications all over the standings, both in the AL and the NL. We'll start in the NL. The Philadelphia Phillies will be playing host to the San Diego Padres in a three-game series. The Padres, 44-36. They're 19-22 on the road. Their partner or the counterparts, the Phillies, 47-34 on the year, 26-14 at home. First game of this series is on Monday the 30th, 6:35, first pitch. The Phillies are putting Sanchez on the mound, and the Padres are undecided. They're giving the Phillies a 60.2% chance to come out of Citizens Bank Park with a win in game one. Game two, Zach Wheeler on the mound for the Phillies going against Pivetta. Pivetta 8-2. Wheeler is 7-3. Wheeler's ERA is 2.55, while Pivetta is 3.36. Pivetta giving up 70 hits on 101 strikeouts, 24 walks, 11 home runs. Wheeler just 67 hits, 126 strikeouts, 25 walks, and 10 homers. Tatis Jr. leading home runs, while Schwarber's doing so for the Phillies. Machado, the best batting average for the Padres, while Trey Turner does so for the Phillies. Machado has the most RBIs, while Kyle Schwarber does for the Phillies. That's a 6:30 p.m. first pitch as well. 61.9% chance for the Phils. Mick Abel stepping on the mound for game three against Dylan Cease. Cease is 3-6. Mick Abel 2-1. They're giving the Phillies a 52.4% chance to win this game as well. And I'm taking the Phillies to win the series because they're at home. 26-14 screams, we are good in this place. 19-22 screams, we have troubles on the road. And I'm going to take the home team to win yet another home series. Our next series on the diamond, the New York Yankees will be going on the road to take on the Toronto Blue Jays. This one starts on Monday as well, 7:07 first pitch. They're giving the Yankees a 57.8% chance to win the first game in Rogers Center. Carlos Rodon will take on Max Scherzer. Rodon's 9-5 on the year. Scherzer has yet to pick up a win. Max Fried on the mound for the Yankees in game two. He's 10-2 on the year. Kevin Gausman will be on the round for the Blue Jays. He's 6-6 on the year. 61.1% chance for those Yankees to come out victorious. 3:07 first pitch. Aaron Judge leading home runs, batting average, and runs batted in for the Yankees. George Springer has the most home runs for the Blue Jays. Alejandro Kirk has the best batting average, and Bo Bichette has the most RBIs. Game three coming on the second, 7:07 first pitch on Prime Video. Will Warren will take on Jose Berrios. They give the Blue Jays a 54.1% chance to win this game. I'm going to go with ESPN as well. I'm going to say the Yankees win this series. Not sure if they sweep or not, but two games is enough to win. I think that when you look at having Rodon and Fried on the mound, two of their aces, they have good chance to win the game, and their bats have been batting. We know that thanks to the torpedo bats. So I'll take the Yankees to win, even though they're on the road against a team that does play pretty well at home. That's going to get us into our last two picks matchups of the weekend. We're getting into the Octagon for UFC 317 going down in T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada later tonight. Early prelims starting on ESPN Plus and Disney Plus, 6:30 p.m. ESPN, ESPN Plus, and Disney Plus are the prelims at 8 and PPV, 10 p.m. for the main card. We'll start with the co-main event. We got a flyweight title fight against Alexandre Pantoja, 29-5. He's 5'5", 124 pounds, 35 years of age, 67.5-inch reach, orthodox on his fighting stance, and he's a minus 250 favorite for this fight. Kai Kara, France, coming in at 25-11, stands 5'4", 125 pounds, 32 years in age, 69 inches on the reach, and is also fighting orthodox, but he's a plus 200 favorite. I've seen both of these fighters fight. They're immaculate fighters. They both are great on their feet. They both do pretty well on the ground when it comes to grappling. I think the difference here is the experience for Pantoja in the championships fights, the experience of him having and defending a championship before, and him being a Brazilian. That BJJ that they practice, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, is different than what everybody else is putting out. And if you can't compete with that, you better be able to box. But the thing is, a lot of those Brazilians can box too, so it's not a real advantage. I'm going to take Pantoja to go ahead and defend his title. The main event in the lightweight division, Ilia Topuria versus Charles Oliveira. Topuria 16-0 out of Georgia. Charles Oliveira 35-10 out of Brazil. Topuria 5'7", 145 pounds, 28 years of age, 69 inches on the reach. Charles Oliveira 5'10", 156 pounds, 35 years in age, 74 inch on the reach. He fights orthodox as well. Topuria negative 500 on the favorites card, while plus 350 for Charles Oliveira. I think this one's plain and simple. 16-0, looking to get his first championship. He is yet to lose, fighting someone who is known for being that guy and being successful. But Oliveira has had his troubles of recent, and age is only catching up to him. Going to have to go with Topuria. So that's going to give me Ilia Topuria, Pantoja, Phils, Yanks, Lynx, and Dream for this weekend. I hope you guys have just as fun of a weekend as I'm going to have. And we'll be back next week with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.